This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. It's 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, December 18th. Nice to have you here all across the Civic Media Radio Network. If you missed us last hour, head over to civicmedia.us and tune in. We had this week's climate check with Melissa Baldoff and talked about the electors meeting at the state capitol yesterday to cast their votes for President-elect Trump and how there were no fake electors there. Crazy how that happens, huh? And then we also wrapped up the hour talking about, today's history lesson and birthdays. And Keith Richards turns 81 years old today, and Roger writes in on Facebook, Keith Richards has outlived Elvis, Michael Jackson, and Whitney Houston. Bet you didn't see that coming. I promise you, we did not see that coming. In fact, but it's not just Keith Richards, Greg Bach. There's all kinds of rock and roll folks who made it longer than you thought they would.
Yeah, the four original members of Black Sabbath, and if you're like, well, what big deal is that? Just look up what they did in the 70s, and I don't mean the music. I mean the drugs. All of the drugs. Every drug that was made in the 70s, they stole from someone and did them themselves. The fact they're alive is amazing.
I would just say, are they and Keith Richards and others, are they alive or are they embalmed? You know, and just moving nicely for all the preservatives they've added. I don't know. Who's to say? meteorologist Brittany Berloa is here now, and this is one happy woman.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited.
Winter is on the doorstep. Look at you. You're just, you know where the snowblower is. You know where. So there are people that do not know where the snowbrush is and have not put it in their car yet. So,
oh, my goodness. Well,
you'd better fix that quickly. Yeah. So walk us through what we're going to be seeing here.
All right. So today we'll see a few spots of sunshine, but a lot more clouds out there. Temperatures slowly falling throughout the afternoon. And then, of course, we are looking at snow pushing in by early tomorrow morning. Actually, some western areas, especially northwest, you could see this moving in overnight around 2 to 3 a.m. So the snow is going to push in, move into central areas around 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, and then off into the eastern areas around 8 a.m. And it is just going to continue all throughout the day, into the evening, into the overnight, and then winding down by early Friday morning. We are looking at a widespread 3 to 6 inches across the state. This system is going to be, of course, whipping up some lake effect snow additionally. So there are winter storm watches already issued. That's, of course, in towards Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, the Fox Valley, that south shore along Lake Superior as well, where your totals could climb towards the double digits near 10 inches is possible.
Oh, okay. Well, that would explain comments like Tony here in Ashland saying, I already used the snowblower once, didn't need to, but wanted to be sure it was running this year. Then you've got Rob in Tigerton saying, I am ready to rock and roll plowing Woo-hoo! This snow. He says, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy and 27, wind chill 18, northwest winds at 10. Yesterday, I got Christmas treats from my friend Anita for plowing her sidewalks after the snow falls. He mentions that Fox 11 in Green Bay has named tomorrow's snow as Snowstorm Asher, to which I will respond, as I do every year, stop it. Don't do those storms.
So dumb.
And Rob concludes with, I know a certain Civic Media meteorologist is going to be smiling ear to ear for this snow.
Oh,
it's money for me for Christmas, says Rob, who plows a lot of snow. So, yep, Mother Nature will basically shake the moneymaker, the snow clouds, and make Rob a very happy person. And
absolutely.
Brittany as well.
Same. Yeah. I'm so excited, you guys. Get out and enjoy it. Honestly, have the kids make snowmen, roll them in your driveway, so then you don't have to shovel it. How's that?
Roll the children in your driveway? That's not great advice there, Brittany. Roll the children, make the snowmen.
Roll the snowmen out of snow in the driveway so that you've got this really dirty snowman with all the, you know, the schmutz that's on your driveway.
This is Morris the snowman. Happy Christmas.
Snowman that looks like it needs a hot shower. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Brittany, thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
All right. It is time for the Civic Media Grown-Up Gift List Text to Win contest. For that, you'll need the Civic Media app. Tune to one of the stations, use the text button at the bottom of the screen, and send in this hour's keyword by the end of this hour for your chance to win. This is a statewide contest. All Civic Media stations are participating. And from everybody, one hourly winner will be drawn to win a stay at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells overnight. And then there will be eight grand prize winners chosen randomly at the end of the contest to pick a gift from the grown-up gift list. You can learn more at civicmedia.us. Prizes include a snowblower, luggage set, espresso machine, humidifier, robot vacuum, and more. And if you're not the hourly winner this time, play it again at 11 a.m. And then you'll have it throughout the day as well. All right, here's this hour's keyword. And after a few days of having to do a spelling bee, this one I think you're going to get. This hour's keyword is toy. T-O-Y. That's it. Toy. So text TOY on your Civic Media app, and you can be eligible for winning some great prizes off the grown-up gift list statewide text to win contest. It's 7:12 now, and the Milwaukee Bucks were winners yesterday in the NBA Cup title game in Las Vegas, beating the Oklahoma City Thunder 97-81. What had been a 5-point lead by Milwaukee, they blew it out in the second half with a 19-5 run, and the Bucks kept control the rest of the way. All the players got, well, just a truckload of money, about $500,000 each for the members of the winning team. So the Bucks have now won 13 out of their last 16. The Bucks will be in Cleveland on Friday, and then they will be back home on Saturday to host the Washington Wizards. All right, let's turn now to an extended homeroom segment, as we do on Wednesdays, where we talk about education issues. And we actually have a double shot of homeroom today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will talk to Wisconsin's new superintendent of the year. We have had Amy Starzecki on before, superintendent in the Superior School District. And since that time, she has won that honor. So we're looking forward to visiting with her about that. But first, we're going to talk a bit more about the importance of a good civics education and appreciation for how government works and how it works best, being an informed voter, all those good things, with Kate Ullman, who joins us here from the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition. Kate, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's nice to see you again. And when we spoke last time, we were in the throes of, you know, an election campaign and talking about, you know, the importance of learning civics at all ages and its significance for folks once they get out into the adult world here. And now that the election has come and gone, you know, there's again that discussion of what are we teaching in terms of a civics education in Wisconsin, strengths, weaknesses, you know, opportunities, you know, all of those things. And so I wanted to get your standpoint from a coalition standpoint, post-election, and your feelings on, again, the importance of teaching civics in Wisconsin schools.
Yeah, well, you know, our coalition, the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition, is comprised of about 20 organizations and then a lot of other individuals who want to see stronger civics education in our state. And just to set the stage a little bit for that, Wisconsin is one of 11 states that do not require students to take a government class to graduate from high school. We've done a survey across the state a couple years ago to see how many schools do have a required civics course. And it's about 75% of schools in the state where students do take a government or civics class to graduate. That also is about 75% of students. So when you look at it by the numbers, who are taking a class before they graduate. But, you know, that leaves 25% of kids who don't take a government class to graduate. And I think that's one of the concerns of our coalition, is trying to make sure that all students have access to really high quality civic learning, really fantastic and engaging experiences before they graduate from high school.
You're putting this in a nice positive manner. I'm hearing the 25% don't get it, and I just want to hang my head. I mean, seriously, and I know other people do. And look, it's not just a class for the sake of having a class. There's this real life utility in it. And on your website, which is civicswi.org, You cite a survey by the Center for Information and Research on Civil Learning and Engagement that says 3 out of 4 youths say they have the power to change the country, but just 2 out of 5 say they feel well qualified to participate in politics, and just under 1 in 4 cast a ballot. So this isn't education for the sake of education. There is some real personal empowerment that comes with a good civics education.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, because you're right that it's not enough to just check the box and say, oh, did you take a class or not? You know, we want to really see high quality civics education that is drawing on the best practices in the field. And that means using controversial issues discussion, using simulations of like authentic civic processes, things that really engage students, and making sure that it's relevant to them so that they feel empowered and ready to be voters when they turn 18. I'll give you a little bit of an example of some schools that are doing a fantastic job of that. My day job is as the executive director of the Legislative Semester, which is an organization that supports teachers that use a simulation-based civic learning curriculum. So there's about, I think, 12 schools in Wisconsin that use this now, 8 in Dane County, some in Milwaukee County, and we're looking to expand across the state next year to some other regions around Eau Claire area and the Green Bay area. And the students who do the legislative semester, they basically create a House of Representatives in their school. So by the end of the semester, they're in the auditorium, they're debating and voting on the bills that they've written. And they've got elected leadership who's presiding over the session. You know, we're talking 200 students. And it's just incredibly engaging for students. And research has demonstrated that when they have this experience, they're more interested in politics and policymaking, and they're more likely to vote and be engaged in the future, and they're more open-minded. And I think that's just really, really essential, is that we're helping students learn about the process, but we're not contributing to the sort of toxic polarization that we've seen in recent years in our whole larger political system.
That is a great point. I know that when I first mentioned, our guest for today, there was a comment on Facebook saying, well, there shouldn't be indoctrination in schools. Exactly. So how about if we give a good, well-rounded education so that folks are less susceptible to being indoctrinated, by basic cable TV hosts or things like that. So when we come back after the break, I'm going to talk more to Kate Ullman from the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition. We're going to talk about, what she just said, dealing with controversial topics. And is that going to be made a little bit more difficult when you have, state legislatures around the country that are actually trying to limit the use of certain words, trying to limit the discussion on topics? Makes it a little bit tougher to teach people to be good voters in the future for the topics we're all going to have to deal with here in the real world. That and much more with Kate Ullman, Amy Starzecki coming up as well. But first, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. And by the way, this hour's keyword is toy. Text it in now.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Christina Aguilera's birthday today, Billie Eilish and others. You can catch that in today's history lesson every weekday morning at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio on this Wednesday, December 18th, only 7 days left until Christmas. Sign up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up at the top of the page. And in there, one of the articles is all about some of the best holiday light displays around Wisconsin. And they list a lot of them. There's Wildwood Zoo in Marshfield and Regner Park in West Bend, Evergreen Park in Sheboygan. I, of course, am partial toward the Christmas Village in Chippewa Falls here at Irvine Park. So read up on those, a link to seeing an even longer list of them around Wisconsin. That's at upnorthnewswi.com. Or if you wish, you can share your own favorites here that you want us to talk about by calling or texting us at 855 @Civic. Always nice to hear from you, or put something in the comments section of Facebook or YouTube, where you can also watch us do the show live every weekday morning. Let's bring back Kate Ullman now from the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition. And in talking about civics, we'll get back to there's theory and there's practice. We'll come back to theory in a minute. Let's go to practice. The actual participation by young people this year, there was so much energy, especially among certain folks after Vice President Kamala Harris joined the ticket. I recall talking to the granddaughter of a delegate who had to come to the national convention in Chicago because she was so inspired by the changes that were out there. And the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition certainly is one that encourages people to be voters right away when you turn 18. So from a standpoint of both voter registration and any other volunteerism or other activities, how would you rate that from the way Wisconsin young people embraced or stayed away from this presidential campaign this year?
Well, I think one of the challenges of a presidential campaign is that there's such a huge focus on the presidential race and the top of the ticket, and it's really a lot of drama. And it actually is off-putting sometimes to young people. So one of the things that I encourage the teachers I'm working with to do this year is to really look at the election as more holistically and look at all the different races and help students understand that, you know, when they're voting in a local school board race, their city council, their county board, you know, their voice really matters in those elections and those outcomes matter in their communities. And so that's one of the real opportunities for civics education, I think, is to help actually kind of bring the focus away from the federal level and think about like how students have opportunities to engage on the local level. And honestly, it's also a lot less partisan at the local level. You know, we're just really practically trying to solve problems in our communities. So I think that's a huge opportunity.
You're talking up the practical benefits of participating in local elections. I might weep. I'm so happy to hear this. I was so happy when our folks, our friends over at Motherhood for Good, of all the different merchandise they put out on T-shirts, one of them that one of my daughters probably wears just says support local elections. Mm-hmm. And just how important, because civics and civic engagement happens first and foremost at the local level. You know, we're not all involved in a presidential campaign once every 4 years. So
well,
on that point,
I want to emphasize that our coalition is really strongly nonpartisan, and mm-hmm. in that we are really advocating for nonpartisan civics education, right? And that's essential because our schools need to be nonpartisan spaces, but this is also political. So it's kind of this interesting balance. The approach needs to be nonpartisan, but we also need to allow students to talk about partisan issues and bring their own ideas into the classroom. And also, you know, I think there's this misconception that teachers are indoctrinating students, when in reality, teachers are really there to help give the students skills and knowledge to be active participants. And like we just said, you know, a lot of that is very nonpartisan, especially at the more local level.
Exactly. I recall I've mentioned before all those years as an evening, you know, TV anchor and, you know, not letting on one bit about my own politics. It was about essentially, you know, out there preaching the gospel of you got to vote, whether it's Democrat, Republican, whether it's nonpartisan elections or whatever, you've got to participate. And I recall being downright evangelical about that, because if we don't have that level of participation, you know, the country's going to go off in weird directions with oligarchs and everything else that could come along with it. But in terms of the controversial topics that you can talk about in school, and again, I know you're a nonpartisan organization, so we're talking about this from a general standpoint, but the fact that there are politicians out there that would like to limit what topics can be discussed in classrooms has got to be, I don't think alarming is too strong a word for how some of your colleagues might feel about this.
No, I do think that a lot of people in the civics education world are alarmed by that trend in some states. And luckily, Wisconsin hasn't seen that. We don't have a law that censors teachers and at the state level, but there are local districts that have adopted policies that limit what teachers can talk about in the classroom in terms of specific topics that they're allowed to discuss, or kind of a difficult approval process they need to go through to be able to discuss certain topics. But I think that, you know, that really stems from, I think, some fear and some, again, some misconceptions about what really is happening in the classroom. And that's where there's real opportunity for everyone across the state to engage with their local school leaders to advocate for really good practices in their local area, because high quality civics education is going to have huge benefits in the long term for their community. You know, you need to grow your own local leaders, right? And so I think there's a great opportunity to talk to school administrators and school board members about the importance of giving teachers the freedom to bring those really controversial issues into the classroom and then do it in a way that's appropriate and that, you know, gives students opportunity to hear multiple perspectives. That's really essential.
So where do we go from here? You know, people, you know, with the election over, a lot of folks just kind of unplug. But the fact of the matter is, obviously, education is a year-round thing. And so the need for civics education is. And I see participation here and resources from the Wisconsin Elections Commission and Keep Our Republic and the League of Municipalities and the Civics Renewal Network. But what about at that local, you know, parent community level? Are there things that they can do to assist, you know, your efforts to teach more civics?
Yeah, well, I think there's two things. One is at the local level. You know, Wisconsin has a strong tradition of local control of schools. And so there is an opportunity. And also, it's really essential that local community members are engaging in conversations with their school leaders about this and to make sure that they're, you know, that this is a focus in the schools, that this is a priority. And at the state level, we're really interested in mobilizing some funding for civics education, because there is really none at this point.
Perfectly timed as we head into a new legislative session and a new state budget. Kate Ullman from the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition, thank you so much again. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. When we come back, Amy Starzecki, Wisconsin's new superintendent of the year, coming up after this. You're up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker premiered on this day in 1892 in St. Petersburg, Russia. As we continue into the holiday spirit and more about the end of the school year, not the end of the school, the end of the calendar year. And of course, we're in the midst of the school year before the holiday break as well. And I'm really pleased to welcome back to the program Dr. Amy Starzecki from the Superior School District, recently named as Wisconsin Superintendent of the Year. Dr. Starzecki, welcome back and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're taking this so well, but I know it's been a couple of weeks here. So,
yeah.
I mean, is it, I imagine it's not like sports. There was nobody with a bottle of champagne pouring it over you or anything like that, but, but still, this had to be pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. You know, we've had a handful of our staff be recognized at the state level in recent years. Just recently, we had a Teacher of the Year. Lori Dons was identified as the Wisconsin Teacher of the Year. We've had our Instructional Leader of the Year with our Curriculum Director, Food Service Director of the Year. So we've got a lot of things to be really proud of. And so I'm fortunate to be surrounded around so many awesome staff and students and families.
Well, I want to give you a chance to brag up the folks in Superior a little bit more. There's a special place for me about this because of growing up in St. Paul. And everybody was all about Minneapolis this, Minneapolis that. And people see all this, and I'm sure folks would be like, well, you could go over the bridge in Duluth and be in the big city and everything else. But Superior is not that way. Superior is not looking to be annexed to Minnesota anytime soon.
No, and I actually worked in Duluth before I came to Superior. I was the assistant superintendent there for 3 years, and then I came over here to Superior. I love being in Superior. Superior is just the right size district for me and my family. It's kind of a big town, but it's a small town as well. And everybody knows everybody, and you feel very well connected in this community.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, and our friend Chris Hambuck Boyle puts up there, Superior is a gem in the Northwoods. Thank you, Chris, for that comment.
Thank you, Chris.
On Facebook. So I wanted to ask you about your experience leading into this, because now you entered the field of education as a school psychologist.
So I did. I had a very unique entry point. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, was that because you were looking for that career path specifically, or you were just interested in the beginning in psychology as a field overall?
Well, I started, I graduated from college, actually, pre-med. I was thinking about going to medical school. And as I neared graduation, I realized I don't think that's really the path that I want to take. I loved science. I loved problem solving. I loved psychology, really trying to, problem solve through some of those different issues. And I learned about school psychology, and it just felt like the perfect career. And I was only in that position for a very short period of time when one of my administrators, I think, saw something in me and really encouraged me to get my administrative license and go into leadership. And so, yeah, I have a very unique entry point and a unique path. I was a special education coordinator. I was an elementary principal. I was a K-12 principal and superintendent, then assistant superintendent, and now in Superior.
Well, and again, this is not a knock on parents, of course, but not all parents are created equal. And there is something about that school counselor or that principal or that teacher or what have you that provides that extra bit of not just empathy, but also some, shall we say, educated encouragement that says, why don't you try this class or this activity or this coping tactic, whatever the case may be. There's so much more to education than just rote memorization and the three R's. And we hear that sometimes in political circles, that schools need to get back to the basics. Schools are doing fine on the basics. There's always room for improvement, but they're doing fine. But you have to have real humans involved in this for it to work. And that sounds like the approach you bring into whatever school you're in.
The whole basis for everything we do in the Superior School District is built on solid relationships. It's built on trusting and solid relationships with students in the classroom, between students and teachers, between families and the school. We know that in order for kids to be successful in the classroom, they have to have a trusting adult, and research supports that. And so, making sure that kids feel supported, welcomed, included, and safe in all of our classrooms is really the foundation of everything we do in Superior.
And you also have a rather collaborative approach here. That again, the last thing you need in education are silos between students and staff and family and community. Silos are very easy to put up compared to bridges in some cases. So, you really bring in a focus in terms of collaboration in the community.
Yeah, we have collaboration within our classrooms. Our teachers are collaborating all the time. Teachers don't work in silos anymore, but we have created really strong partnerships. One of the things I'm really proud of is, since I've been in Superior, we have really strengthened the partnerships with mental health agencies and providing school-based services in all of our schools. We've expanded to all of our schools. Business partnerships have been essential. We just passed an operational referendum, and part of that was making, our Chamber of Commerce was really a huge supporter, and our business community was a huge supporter in making sure that our community understands strong schools mean a strong community and everybody being a part of that. So yes, strong partnerships and those relationships across our community are essential for Superior.
If you're doing the, if you got your left hand out and your right hand out and going back and forth, and on the one hand is superintendent of the year, but in the other hand is passing that operational referendum. Those are two pretty nice feathers in your cap, because they, as 70% or so passed, but there's still plenty of school districts who are going, okay, where do we go from here?
Absolutely. And some of them are neighboring districts, you know, to Superior, and they have some hard decisions to make, whether they're going to go again in April or if they're going to make some significant reductions. And I have explained to our community that the work isn't over. We have to continue to advocate at the legislative level about what public schools need and appropriate public school funding to make sure our kids are getting what they need. They're our future workforce, and it's essential. And I think, you know, research continues to show that all communities across the majority of people in our community support public schools. And so we need to continue to support that.
And there are ways to do that in group functions as well. Folks are familiar, for example, with teachers' unions like WEAC. We were talking just last week about the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, but there's also the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators. Mm-hmm. And that, too, is a group that there are no shrinking violets about, you know, letting legislators and the community know the importance of, you know, right-sized investments in the education of our children.
Yes, and one of the things I think we do well in Wisconsin is we have a coordinated effort between business managers, principals, superintendents, special education directors. We come together and really talk about the issues that are most pressing, financial issues most pressing to our districts, and we combined efforts. We combine those efforts in communicating with our legislators. So they're not hearing lots of different messages from different organizations or education groups, but we are more coordinated in our efforts to make sure that we're really laser focused on what we need in our schools.
Okay, so we've talked about all the things that you're proud of, have gone well in the district, have led to this honor. Obviously, not everything is fixed. You know, there's always challenges in any given scene. Now that you're past the operational referendum, what are the challenges that the Superior School District faces heading into 2025?
You know, I think it's going to continue to be funding and budget. You know, we passed our referendum by 54%. And so we have a large percentage of our community that we need to reach out to and really build those trusting relationships and make sure that our families and our community at large really understands what we're facing when it comes to school finance or the other challenges, and making sure that we have those trusting relationships across all of our community, not just our families, but the community at large who may not have students or grandchildren in our schools. So I think that's one of our biggest challenges, continuing to build those trusting relationships across all stakeholder groups.
Well, the relationship is so important because explaining the system is darn near impossible. I mean, I've been trying to do it for 35 years as a journalist and as a legislator, and now as a radio host is trying to explain this very convoluted system, which, you know, has its reasons for being the way that it is. But beyond the dollars and cents, it's about assuring people that the resources are going to where they are most needed. And, you know, that again is something that in this era of, you know, well, just cut my taxes no matter what, is kind of a high bar with some folks, but you're clearly not giving up the effort.
No. And I think one of the things I've shared with, you know, people at the state level is when all of our districts are moving forward with operational referendums, you know, the majority, over 80% of school districts across the state have had to do this. We get pushback at the local level because people think we've mishandled our school finances. And so that's also where some of the relationships, you know, school finance is so complicated. And so to try to explain revenue limits and other categorical aid and how student enrollment plays into that. And we have a lot of work to do, I think, at the local level to really help people understand school finance and how they can be better advocates for making sure our schools are properly funded.
I'm looking at some of the information about your honor here, and I'd given it a quick read, but now I'm along with everything else. It says here, Dr. Starzecki also serves as an adjunct professor teaching graduate courses for aspiring administrators. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you found that magical 25th hour in the day where you can do this. What does that all involve?
Well, I have been teaching for the last 10 years or so. One of my passions is really supporting administrators and inspiring people to become administrators. We actually just started in our own district, new leadership academy, or what we call it, aspiring administrator academy for teachers who might be interested in being future principals or directors. Someone, like I said earlier, somebody tapped me on the shoulder many, many years ago and said, there's potential here. And so I think we have a duty as leaders to do that. And I truly love teaching. It's rewarding to be able to tell your stories and inspire others to go out and really change the world. And so it's something I do in the evenings for sure. My family is getting older, and so they need less of me in the evening. So I'm able to kind of do some of that work, which is fun, or on the weekends.
No, that's very nice. But for people to then go into admin is clearly, the preferred path to leaving entirely. And while I don't have the most recent numbers in front of me, I know we've seen reports about how I think the last one I heard was that, on average, some teachers will teach for about 6 years and then leave. All that work that they put into it, but they see, the issues that are involved. And yes, maybe some go on to an admin track, but so many others leave the profession entirely. And I'm sure you're aware of that, and how as a leader now, as somebody in admin, how you try to encourage not just recruitment of teachers, but retaining the ones you have.
Yeah, I'm really proud of our mentoring process that we have in the school districts of Superior. I've worked in many other districts. I think what Superior does to support new teachers is the best of the best. We provide a really robust training before the school year starts, and then we provide mentoring all year long. We pair them up with really good teacher mentors in their building. Our administrators are very engaged. We actually just met recently, and we're going to expand our teacher mentor program in our district to be at least a two-year program as opposed to just 1 year. We know that we lose teachers as a whole in those first 3 or 4 years entering the profession. So making sure that they have really strong support systems in place in those first years is really essential to maintaining our workforce as education. Yeah.
Dr. Amy Starzecki is the administrator of the Superior School District and is the new Wisconsin Superintendent of the Year, and will be honored for that next month in Milwaukee at a gathering of the Wisconsin Association of School Boards and Association of School District Administrators convention coming up next month. Dr. Starzecki, congratulations again, and thank you so much for the visit.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Have a wonderful day. And when we come back, Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show will be joining us as well. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I love this Billie Eilish song. And, of course, it's Bad Guy, which brings in Todd Alba, to which Tony replies, where in the world is the Todd father now? He was in Seattle. He looks to be back home now.
Just home. Just right home.
Just home with a good trip. But before I forget, the key word for this hour is TOY, T-O-Y. Text in TOY before the end of this hour and be part of the Grown Up Gift List statewide text to win contest. Your next chance will be at 11 a.m. with Greg and Jane from Matt and Air on Air. And then again, in which hour of the Todd Alba Show?
Hour number two. So 1 p.m.
1 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
The word is toy. If you
this hour.
This hour. Word is toy. It has snowed here in Madison, so it's much too cold to have a pool boy. But you could, for Christmas, have a boy toy. The word is toy, T-O-Y.
Is that how you get so many people to enter the contest? Is that the magic ingredient?
It's no magic. It's just stupidity.
Because I don't know what your secret sauce is over there, but you and Greg and Jane, those two shows, for folks behind the scenes, we see the chart of how many people enter the contest per show. And you two, of course, have had, you know, bets going because you two are consistently at the top of the charts. And it's not just that you're at the top of the charts. You are so head and shoulders above all the rest of us mortals, you know.
Here's what happens. We get these things as well thought out by Aaron Carino, our vice president. And then Jane and Greg come on before me, and they do so great. And they get saucy. And they say, let's throw down the gauntlet and make it a contest. And what am I supposed to do? Sit there like a cream puff and just say, okay. So I'm like, all right. Let's have a contest.
Game on. All right.
And so all I try to do is keep up with Gray and Jeg.
Wow.
Todd's been traveling, by the way, folks. If it hasn't been clear, he was out in Seattle. Yeah,
Jane and Greg, and they're right up my heels. They're nipping at my skirt, and you know.
I believe we'll Todd. Happens. We were wearing the skirt yesterday, so whatever.
All right. Well, anyway, there will be more keywords throughout the day here. I want to mop up a couple of things from our last segment with Amy Starzecki, who, again, just so well deserved up there. Tony writes in, there's just something special about things going on up north. Chris Hambuck Boyle says, thank you, Amy, for all of your hard work. But then Tony passes along a comment from someone else who says, why do schools need more money? They have less students now. Okay, once again, from the top, A, inflation, you know, schools have to buy things too, the prices aren't coming down, and B, fewer students doesn't mean lower bills, and the example I always use is the school bus, but you could use a whole bunch of others. There's 50 kids in the school bus, but the next year, because of declining enrollment, there's 45 kids in the school bus. But they still have to drive the same route. Gas costs the same. Oh, no, wait. It probably costs more. So don't equate declining enrollment with, oh, the schools don't need as much money. That's nonsense. So Todd, being as passionate a public education advocate as I am, I knew he wouldn't mind if I brought that up.
No, and in all honesty, I do think it's a good question to bring up, because the three of us, you know, we've had the privilege and the opportunity to know a lot of educators. I come from a family of educators. So to us, it seems just kind of second nature. But to those that don't pay attention like we do, I think it's an honest and good question. It's just, I think it demonstrates the need to continue to talk about folks and literally and figuratively educate folks on education. So I get the question, but your point, Pat, the other example is special education, as we all know so well, that those special education, public schools have to take all kids, private schools get to be selective, and public schools have increasing costs, and the legislature continues not to fully fund not just all students, but in particular, special needs kids.
And it's worse than that. Public schools get reimbursed for their special education costs around 35% or so. It's fluctuated, okay? Which means all the rest of the cost of special education comes from the general fund. What the local property taxpayers put up, money that would otherwise be used for other things, comes to special education. That's fine. It's 35% reimbursement, but this is the same Republican-led legislature, and this is so important, that looks at all the voucher schools and says, well, not only are we going to pass along, are we going to skim money off the top for you guys, we're going to reimburse your special education costs at 90%.
Right.
I mean, if everything else about the school funding formula, if you could get more people in Wisconsin to say, hey, I'm good with voucher schools, but even that sounds unfair to me, that would be progress.
But look, I'm gonna make a quick turn here. What 3-4 minutes we spent on getting the truth out there versus, well, there's declining enrollment. Now think about coming up with the Supreme Court race in the spring, how much easier it's going to be for the conservative candidate, Brad Schimmel, Republicans, to say, well, I mean, what do you want to do, pay higher taxes? If Democrats try to make this spring Supreme Court election about Act 10, I wish that they would stop with all this talk about Act 10. It was one judge in Dane County, and yes, I'm glad I agree with that decision, but it's a long way from overturning Act 10, mm-hmm. and it can't be about public education, or I'm telling you, Brad Schimmel will win that Supreme Court race.
And then goodness only knows where we go from there. So, yeah. All right. Well, Todd Albo will be back noon to 2 across the Civic Media Radio Network. You know I always enjoy it. Greg Bach is back for Matt and Air on Air 2 little hours from now.
Indeed.
And then tomorrow on this year program, Christina Sandher. You might recall her as State Representative Christina Shelton. She is now out of legislative politics, and she is now the Executive Director of Wisconsin Progress, a group that trains the next generation of first-time progressive candidates. And Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro will be joining us tomorrow as well. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Follow us at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Sign up for the newsletter there. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.